Okay, this is an interview with George Moriarty. George started with the CCC camps in the 30s and later came with the Soil Conservation Service. And he's a retired district conservationist that lives at Aiken, Minnesota. This is Don Benrood interviewing George Moriarty about the early days with the CC camps and the early work with the Soil Conservation Service. George, you want to tell us a little bit about some of the experiences in the CCC camps in southeastern Minnesota?
Well, we had a lot of experiences, and many of them I'm not going to tell you at all about it. But in spite of my very youthful appearance and outstanding vigor, I've been around for a long, long time. And my first experience with working in the field, in the soil conservation field, was as a CCC person. And that was in 1934, when the camp was stationed at Houston, Minnesota.
What types of projects did you work on when you were with the CCCs at Houston, George?
Well, in those days, it was a labor-providing sort of a deal. They had the CC labor to do all of this work. And the what we call technicians with the Soil Conservation Service worked on these farm plans, but it was mostly erosion control measures or practices, and much of it was structures at that time. In the valleys in Houston County, there were a lot of steep land on there, a lot of narrow valleys. There were a lot of dams built, retention dams, many steps, little step dams that were built down in the grade in these valleys.
Tell me about the role of, was the Soil Conservation Service in existence at that particular time, and what role did the Soil Conservation Service play with the CCC camps and relationship there?
I'm not sure it was Soil Conservation Service right then. I wonder if that didn't come in 35. District Center came in 1936. The old ECW, Erosion Control Works, it was known as then. But it was an emergency thing. All these CC people were in there, youngsters, and they were used for labor in constructing these things. And in order to sell conservation to the public, you had to give them a lot of stuff. And they were given everything. And, many of the practices were established. The labor was provided. When they got into it, was an old Swedish conservationist that we had there. It always talked about the three categories of land. There was the crop land and the pasture land and the woodland.
the
woodland. Later, well, that got to be a big thing. But the fields then that were laid out on the contour, it changed the fence lines, changed the field lines, then the CCC labor was used to construct new fences where it was put in. If an area was determined to be woodlot and isolated, the CCC people provided the labor to build the fence, and in many instances, the government provided some of the material.
Were conservation plans developed at that time as we know conservation plans today? We had soil surveys and laid out these fields and various practices.
This practice layouts came into being a little bit later on any scale. I went with the district in 1939, or with the Soil Conservation Service. And then the war came along and the camps all went out. We didn't have this labor and started in district work in 1940. 1940, right. 41, right after Pearl Harbor. And that's when we became better salesmen, ahead of the salesmen. We brought in selling to farmers on this thing. And they were getting then some subsidy from the, what used to be AAA, ASC. And these practices were laid out. We as technicians went out and worked with the farmer. We got on tractors and we plowed in strips. And we got some pictures here, I'll show you later on. We worked in some instances with horses, plowing in gullies. And there wasn't very much done, but to move along a little bit, some of the greatest satisfaction that I had when I went into the Houston District in 1943, and we used to hold educational meetings, and they used to take part in them. And we talked to farmers about country strip cropping, you know, and they just kind of laughed in their face. 1943, I think the Houston District established something like 300 acres of country strip cropping. That was the total application. Mm-hmm. We did some drainage work, a little of that, and built some structures were being done. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, as the war came along and there was more need for...
During the war, did the farmers establish these practices pretty much themselves, or did they have contractors come in with the equipment that worked on establishing waterways and structures and this sort of thing, as we know?
It's about when they got into hiring equipment, but most of it was done in the earlier days with the equipment that the farmer had.
With the farm plow and
farm plow
some
and
graders and
the
stuff.
And the graders plowed these gullies in and made waterways, structured them in that manner. But there was quite a drive for greater production, of course, during that time. And we did get farmers to come along a little bit faster all the time. And then the government started subsidizing for the establishment of country strip cropping, establishment of terraces.
When did the ACP program come into being the way we know it today? Of course, you talked about cost sharing through AAA. Was that the ACP program, or was there another program?
It was the same thing. Mm-hmm. But that was in during the war, mm-hmm. in the late years of the war, where they began making payments to the farmer for establishing conservation practices, and later on for seeding down, and that sort of thing. The big selling point then, of course, some of it was patriotic, but it was economical. The experiment station at La Crosse, that was run by the Soil Conservation Service, had an awful lot of experiments and trials and so on with their outdoor lab. And the interesting thing there is that they were able to show that the runoff water from an uncontoured field, the amount of plant food, of the nutrient that was in the runoff water, as compared to there where they had terraces or contour strip cropping, where that water was contained on the field, you had all that nutrient available for crop production. And it was really well established that yields were greater. There was just much saving in the operation of equipment because of running on the contour. This helps sell.
So these practices were pretty effective in controlling that erosion, reducing sediment then, as based on the findings at La Crosse Experiment Station.
Very effective, very effective.
Well, how about back at in the 30s there, tell me about some of these CCC camps and where they were located and the numbers of people that were there and how they were set up and operated and some of the functioning of these CCC camps.
Well, the average camp would run around 200 enrollees, 200 kids. They were administered by the Army, by the commanding officer and junior officer, and probably that'd be about all of the Army personnel. And then they used they picked from the boys in the camp various people with some leadership qualities and that could function as leaders. And they had somebody, a boy in charge of each of the crews. The camp was administered, like I said, by the Army. They fed, housed, clothed all of these kids. And daily they were turned over to what we refer to as the using agency, which up north was the Forest Service, down south it was the Soil Conservation Service. These men were turned over every day and provided the labor for all of this work that was done in the field. The CCC, I still think now, it was one of the greatest things that the government ever did for the young people, to bring them in. Most of these kids were taken off the street. They were taken from homes that didn't have enough to eat. They weren't given very much money. They were only paid a dollar a day, and then $30 a month and $25 a year had to go home, so we had $5 spending money. They all got some pretty good training. Most of them went on to get better jobs. This is, in fact, when the war began, those kids from the CCC camp that were in a leadership position were just almost a walk-in for officers' training. Mm-hmm.
Where were some of these camps located in southeastern Minnesota? You worked in some of them too, didn't you?
Well, Houston was one of the early ones. Caledonia, I had a camp there. There was a camp at Lanesboro. There's one at Plainview, Rochester. At Winona, Lake City, Red Wing, Zumbrota. Pretty much in the southeast. And those were, of course, all used.
Okay, this is an interview with George Moriarty. George started with the CCC camps in the 30s and later came with the Soil Conservation Service, and he's a retired district conservationist that lives at Aiken, Minnesota. This is Don Benrud interviewing George Moriarty about the early days with the CCC camps and the early work with the Soil Conservation Service. George, you want to tell us a little bit about some of the experiences in the CCC camps in southeastern Minnesota?
Well, we had a lot of experiences, and many of them I'm not going to tell you at all about it. But in spite of my very youthful appearance and outstanding vigor, I've been around for a long, long time. And my first experience with working in the field, in the soil conservation field, was as a CCC person. And that was in 1934, when the camp was stationed at Houston, Minnesota.
What types of projects did you work on when you were with the CCCs at Houston, George?
Well, in those days, it was a labor-providing sort of a deal. They had the CC labor to do all of this work. And the what we call technicians with the Soil Conservation Service worked under these farm plans, but it was mostly erosion control measures or practices, and much of it was structures at that time. In the valleys in Houston County, there were a lot of steep land on there, a lot of narrow valleys. There were a lot of dams built, retention dams, many steps, little step dams that were built down in the grade in these valleys.
Tell me about the role of, was the Soil Conservation Service in existence at that particular time, and what role did the Soil Conservation Service play with the CCC camps and relationship there?
I'm not sure it was Soil Conservation Service right then. I wonder if that didn't come in 35. District Center came in 1936. The old ECW, Erosion Control Works, it was known as then. But it was an emergency thing. All these CC people were in there, youngsters, and they were used for labor in constructing these things. And in order to sell conservation to the public, you had to give them a lot of stuff. And they were given everything. And, many of the practices were established. The labor was provided. When they got into it, was an old Swedish conservationist that we had there. It always talked about the three categories of land. There's the crop land and the pasture land and the woodland.
the
woodland. Later, well, that got to be a big thing. But the fields then that were laid out on the contour, it changed the fence lines, changed the field lines. Then the CCC labor was used to construct new fences where it was put in. If an area was determined to be woodlot and isolated, the CCC people provided the labor to build the fence, and in many instances, the government provided some of the material.
Were conservation plans developed at that time as we know conservation plans today? We had soil surveys and and laid out these fields and various practices.
This practice layouts came into being a little bit later on any scale. I went with the district in 1939, or with the Soil Conservation Service. And then the war came along and the camps all went out. We didn't have this labor and started in district work in 1940. 1940, right. 41, right after Pearl Harbor. And that's when we became better salesmen, ahead of the salesmen. We were selling to farmers on this thing. And they were getting then some subsidy from the, what used to be AAA, ASC. And these practices were laid out. We as technicians went out and worked with the farmers. We got on tractors and we plowed in strips. And we got some pictures here, show you later on. We worked in some instances with horses plowing in gullies. And there wasn't very much done, but to move along a little bit, some of the greatest satisfaction that I had when I went into the Houston district in 1943, and we used to hold educational meetings, and they used to take part in them. And we talked to farmers about contra-strip cropping, and they just kind of laughed in their face. 1943, I think the Houston district established something like 300 acres of contra-strip cropping. That was the total application. Mm-hmm. We did some drainage work, a little of that, and built some structures were being done. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, as the war came along and there was more need for...
During the war, did the farmers establish these practices pretty much themselves, or did they have contractors come in with the equipment that worked on establishing waterways and structures and this sort of thing?
It's about when they got into hiring equipment, but most of it was done in the earlier days with the equipment that the farmer had.
With the farm plow and
farm plow
some
and
graders and stuff.
The horses and the graders plowed these gullies in and made waterways, structured them in that manner. But there was quite a drive for greater production, of course, during that time. And we did get farmers to come along a little bit faster all the time, and then the government started subsidizing for the establishment of contra-strip cropping, establishment of terraces.
When did the ACP program come into being the way we know it today? Of course, you talked about cost sharing through AAA. Was that the ACP program, or was there another program?
It was the same thing. Mm-hmm. But that was in during the war. In the late years of the war, where they began making payments to the farmer for establishing conservation practices and later on for seeding down and that sort of thing. The big selling point then, of course, some of it was patriotic, but it was economical. The experiment station at La Crosse that was run by the Soil Conservation Service had an awful lot of experiments and trials and so on with their outdoor lab. And the interesting thing there is that they were able to show that the runoff water from an uncontoured field, the amount of plant food, of the nutrient that was in the runoff water, as compared to there where they had terraces or contour strip cropping, where that water was contained on the field, you had all that nutrient available for crop production. And it was really well established that yields were great. There was just much saving in the operation of equipment because of going on the contour. This helps sell.
So these practices were pretty effective in controlling that erosion, reducing sediment, and as based on the findings at La Crosse Experiment Station.
Very effective, very effective.
Well, how about back at in the 30s there? Tell me about some of these CCC camps and where they were located and the numbers of people that were there and how they were set up and operated and some of the functioning of these CCC camps.
Well, the average camp would run around 200 enrollees, 200 kids. They were administrated by the Army, where you're a commanding officer and junior officer, and probably that'd be about all of the Army personnel. And then they used they picked from the boys in the camp various people with some leadership qualities and that could function as leaders. And they had somebody, a boy in charge of each of the crews. The camp was administered, like I said, by the Army. They fed, housed, clothed all of these kids. And daily they were turned over to the what we refer to as the using agency, which up north was the Forest Service, down south it was the Soil Conservation Service. These men were turned over every day and provided the labor for all of this work that was done in the field. The CCC, I still think now, it was one of the greatest things that the government ever did for the young people. Bring them in. Most of these kids were taken off the street. They were taken from homes that didn't have enough to eat. They weren't given very much money. They were only paid $1 a day and then $30 a month and $25 of that had to go home. So they had $5 spending money. They all got some pretty good training. Most of them went on to get better jobs. This is, in fact, when the war began, those kids from the CCC camp that were in a leadership position were just almost a walk-in for officers' training. Mm-hmm.
Where were some of these camps located in southeastern Minnesota? You worked in some of them too, didn't you?
Well, Houston was one of the early ones. Caledonia, I had a camp there. There was a camp at Lanesboro. There's one at Plainview, Rochester. At Winona, Lake City, Red Wing, Zumbrota. Pretty much in the southeast. And those were, of course, all the using agency there was the soil conservation people.
Mm-hmm. And they started then under the Soil Erosion Service in 33 and 34, and in 1935 when it became the Soil Conservation Service, where then the SCS provided like the technical assistant, the engineering on these structures.
Right, but they were just the same people that were just working under a different agency.
Different name. Went from Department of Interior to Department of Agriculture.
And the districts as we know them now came in, I'm pretty sure down in 1936, then were staffed. Well, the average district then was staffed. After the war, after 1941, right after when the war began, when the camps were all closed because there was manpower was needed to the Army. Most districts were operated then with about 3 people. And they worked pretty well. Sometimes we look back, we didn't accomplish very much. On the other hand, you look at what we had to start with, and the districts did just one hell of a job. The older I get and the more I think back here, I think that of all government agencies, bureaus and what have you, absolutely none ever came close to doing for the country what the Soil Conservation Service did for the country. We took poor farmers in southeastern Minnesota on hilly, rough land that weren't making a living, the poor farmers, and made them successful, put them on their feet. And you can go back into some of these areas if you wish to challenge that. Talk to some of these farmers, especially the older ones. Tell you what happened after they began using soil conservation practices. It was interesting later on. Now, I told you earlier that we would have these meetings and the farmers all laughed and said, well, we don't farm half as well as we know how now. And maybe you'd get an acre or a couple of acres of contour strip back. And then these same farmers in the late 40s would come into the office asking for assistance. And from that time on, we rarely had enough personnel, and just 2 or 3 and 4 people could hardly keep up to the workload in laying out terraces, laying out front.
When did you really get into like terracing and some of these practices? You talked about a lot of gully control structures at first. Were you putting in terraces right away too, or did that come later?
Real early, Don, and some of them were kind of a joke the way they were built. Of course, we had another problem. If anything that we would call even class 4 land today, the farmers figured it was too good to cut up into strips. And the fields that we got to work on were really badly eroded fields, and steep fields. And some of the terraces that were put in there were sharp and hard to work over. Mm-hmm. But in the late 40s and early 50s, terrorism really took hold. Mm-hmm. It was at that time that we found they could. Well, with condor strip cropping, you had to have alternate strips of close grown and hay and so on, which gave the farmer 50% hay. And as they were trying to get away from that by going to terracing, we go to a little bit shorter rotation. The Soil Conservation Service pioneered in building terraces with plow method of terracing. Get out there with a 2 or 3 bottom plow and an old tractor and just go like the devil from one end to the other and build these terraces. And we was built some pretty workable terraces. But after the war, the economy was better, and that's when contractors came into use by the farmer. They hired the bigger outfits to build the bigger terraces.
How about, you talked about woodland tool, and how involved did you get into the woodland management in those early days?
Well, pretty much. We always had a forester in the camp, and they would set out cruising timber and pointing out to the farmer what he could do instead of clear cutting. In that area, there was a lot of pulp, a lot of ties were taken out in southeastern Minnesota. And these people would come along and they'd buy a block of timber and they'd go in and they'd just clear cut it. And Soil Conservation Service foresters and cruising and having setting up various trials and so on would show where they could go in and cruise the timber and take out the timber that should be removed, and they still had more money, more value left when they got through than they would have clear cut it. But yes, woodland was recognized and set aside, and one of the big things, of course, was to keep the cattle out of it.
It was through that fencing for livestock exclusion.
Right. It was protected, and there were a lot of trees planted. I can't give you figures, but tripping amounts of trees were planted steeper hills, right. And in the odd corners. Wildlife was recognized, too. And most farmers would set aside a corner of land here and there.
It would be an odd area.
Another wildlife vegetation. And that was, those were kind of the good old days in one way, because they weren't so big and they weren't so greedy in farming everything, so that they would set some land aside. And it's very disheartening to go back into that same area today, not Houston County as much as the north and west of there. But many of these practices are being abandoned. Mm-hmm. The fences are out. Some of the terraces have been plowed out because they want to work with bigger equipment. When you had a 2-row corn planter, it was one thing. Now you got 4 and 6-row corn planters.
Now, we've talked about some of these practices in the early days there. How about some of the early leaders that outside of yourself there, George, that worked in southeastern Minnesota, some of the pioneers of the soil conservation movement and so on?
Well, I don't know if I'd qualify, if I in or name myself in with the leaders. I was more of a laborer. I shoes all the time. We worked
on the ground floor, though, anyway.
Well, there's people probably can give you more information on that. But the districts were headed up. Of course, we think of our old friend Herb Fleck, who was in the very, very early days. Those days they had area offices that were a little different from what we call an area now. In fact, there was some regional offices before there was a state office. And we did have similar help to what you've got today. There's all specialists that came out, but the guy in the field was kind of a jack of all trades.
So they did have like foresters and engineers and agronomists and biologists that worked
right
with the
right.
Were they called work unit conservationists in the early days, or what were their titles?
They were I don't know what work unit. Yeah, work unit conservationists came along later. There was work unit leader, No, they were called district conservationists, Don.
Oh, district really, conservationists.
Yeah, the guy heading up the individual district was a district conservationist.
It's back to where it is now.
Back to where it is now. And then there was the area conservationists. Well, then they started throwing them together, and they became the district conservationists, and the guy heading up the district was the work unit leader.
Hmm.
And that went on until, well, in your time, when they changed it back to district conservationists again. No, we had a great bunch of dedicated people in those times, and a lot of it can be laughed at today, but it's the pioneering that was done by those people in those early days, and the way they faced the ridicule in many cases of the public, and hung in there, and got these practices established, and went out. It wasn't at all unusual to see a district personnel out on Saturday plowing in gullies and getting on the tractor, driving the horses in order to get this done. In one way, we were kind of protecting our own jobs, but we did prove to the people that these things did work. And there were a lot of very, very dedicated people back there.
You want to name some among, say, the CCC camps and some of the
well, one of the oldest point of years in Austin age. So John Staley was the district, or what's called now the area conservationist in southeastern Minnesota. John had a background of farming. He had a background in feed sales. So did our old friend, friend Herb Fleck, used to be a feed salesman, and got into this.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of people that came out. We had districts, we had educational meetings, and those people they were out several nights a week, mm-hmm. conducting meetings throughout. So I always think of old John Staley. I think of Marion Roberts from Rochester, one of the earlier ones. I was thinking of my own district, goes way back to Carl Bondi, very few will remember him, died many years ago. Bill Triplett. I saw in the paper just this fall a fellow, J. George Dean. And I thought, can there be another one? And I looked up, and he just died last year at the age of 84.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an area engineer. Mm-hmm. I worked with him at Stillwater. Very, very dedicated. I think most of them were. Bill Lauer is probably still in Winona. You know, there'd be